Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss the topic of coccidiosis in calves. And to have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by Dr. Lindsay Wachter-Mead, who's a Nebraska Extension educator and also a veterinarian based in Webster County. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me back, Aaron.
Well, as we discuss this topic, this is an issue that I think frequently comes up reoccurring in cattle. It's a coccidiosis in calves. In particular, we see this when stressful events occur. Often these cattle are carrying it naturally, but then we have outbreaks at times. Just walk through with us to help us better understand what this organism is, and then what are some things we need to do in terms of thinking about management?
Yeah, so I wanted to start the conversation today to kind of just explain what it is, like you had said, and then how calves get it or how it's transmitted, because it's kind of unique and it's kind of interesting to me, I guess, if I kind of geek out about it just a little bit. But first off, as far as what kind of pathogen it is, coccidia is actually a parasite. So different than the parasite when we think about intestinal worms, but it does fall into that parasite category. And just a couple interesting facts about coccidia. So it affects all ruminants, but the interesting thing about that is that it's host-specific. So if you're co-grazing, you know, sheep and cattle together, they're not sharing the same coccidia species across animal. The cattle only have those certain species of coccidia, and there's lots of them. That's the other thing. So there's approximately 13 species that have been identified in cattle that cause coccidiosis, 12 in sheep, 10 in goats. But not all of those are pathologic. So not all of them are going to cause clinical signs. That's just an interesting little fact to understand about how it is transmitted, because we aren't doing from different species. So that's important to start with. The other thing that's important, other than it's frustrating, and I'm sure that everyone listening has had an experience with coccidiosis at one point, but it does have a fairly high economic loss. So I couldn't find something specifically for the United States, but worldwide, it does have a $723 million annual economic loss worldwide. So that's not so much high mortality rates, but it's definitely more the morbidity and the decrease in gain and or treatment that we deal with after that. So transmission is kind of the neat part, I think. So I already said that it's a parasite. So what happens is this little parasite, it's called an oocyst, that actually lives in the environment. And that thing is extremely smart, I guess. It's able to survive for up to a year, maybe even longer than a year, in the environment. And then what happens is the calves will pick it up, and once that gets into their system, so they pick it up orally, and then it'll travel down into the intestines, and that's where all the damage occurs. So that little oocyte will actually go into a single intestinal cell, and then it will start to kind of rupture open. So I kind of think of it as if you've ever watched like the movies where, you know, those aliens come popping out. That's kind of what I imagine. But once it ruptures inside that intestinal cell, there's all these infective agents that basically come out. So that's how it's kind of multiplying itself. So once it ruptures, it will then release more of these infective agents. They'll get into more intestinal cells that will reproduce again to a point until you have such a high load that it actually starts to pass out the oocytes. So they will pass it out in their feces, and then it just continues that cycle. So it lives in the environment. And kind of another cool fact is that it's so infective when it gets to high levels that you can have, you know, like in 1 gram of feces, you can have millions of oocysts that are present. So we can talk about how quickly that can replicate, but just understanding that it's kind of ubiquitous to our environment.
So I think that's a good thing to remember as we think about treatment or we think about management. We're not in a situation where we're going to eliminate this organism. It's really understanding how do we minimize its impact.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing too, is that it takes a little bit of time. So it's not that immediately once they've picked it up, that it's going to be infective. So the age variability, if we're talking about pre-weaning calves, it's not going to be calves that are 7 days old, because it actually takes up to 2 weeks, 15 to 20 days or so for that parasite to actually replicate, get inside the intestinal cells and rupture out and start to cause damage. So we're usually looking at like a 30 plus day old calf at this point. And that's important to remember because we talk about how we manage our calves in the environment. So knowing that we can't remove it from the environment, there is one thing that is actually will help with controlling it, and that's sunlight. So we talked last month in when we were talking about clostridial disease with the enterotoxemia. The same thing happens if we're talking about calf shelters. So Coccidia loves to hang out where it's wet and if it gets warm. So warm, moist environments will really replicate that breeding ground, if you'd want to say, for the oocytes. So getting those calf shelters moved or cleaned out, because as those calves get older, especially if we go through a weather event and they're really cramming in there, we might see that we're going to have an outbreak after that, because you already brought up the stress, but then we know that we're going to have a high load of that parasite in that environmental area.
So as we think about when we might first see calves exhibiting coccidiosis, help us understand the difference between that and maybe a bloody type scours that's not coccidiosis.
Yeah, so clinical signs, truly, if it's just coccidia that's causing it, you can see that really, really bright red, bloody scours, but it can be any kind of diarrhea. But again, the key is probably going to be you're talking about a calf that's at least a month of age or older. But it doesn't always necessarily just be, and it's actually usually never just coccidia. So we may be having something else on top of it. So again, we talked about enterotoxemia with the clostridial disease. It's usually those co-mingling pathogens that are going to cause a problem. But when we are talking about calves, backing up just a little bit to the scour timeline, and we've talked about this in the past too, but there is a, if you're talking about the first 3 to 7 days of age, usually if you see blood, I'm thinking E. coli in those calves. So if you do see blood in a really young calf, we're probably talking about something a little more serious, if we do have an E. coli infection versus a coccidia problem later on in life. And then we have the viral problems such as corona and rotavirus in that between 2 to 4 weeks of age or so. But it is important to remember that most of the time in any scours outbreak, we're dealing with multiple pathogens that are causing a problem.
So you mentioned the importance of getting cattle in an environment that's maybe clean and dry, and the importance of sunlight. What are some other things we can do to minimize the risk of impact in terms of coccidiosis?
So sunlight is really our only best option. There's no sort of disinfectants or something to get that out, but it's going to equal good pen management. Trying to keep your environment as clean as possible. We're just basically trying to reduce the infective pressure, so reduce how much parasites are out there. It's really key to remember that we're not eliminating it. You probably can't eliminate it, honestly, because it's just so present in the environment. But the other thing is we don't necessarily want it to be 100% sterile, if that was even possible, because these calves can actually create a low immunity based off of it, kind of a partial immunity. So that's why we don't see it so much in those older cows, because they are shedding it potentially very low levels, but they're not having clinical signs because they have created an immunity to it, just like everything else that's been exposed. So trying to keep the environment as well maintained as we possibly can, making sure that we don't have areas where there's moisture standing. And, again, calf shelters are going to be my biggest problem with that. Controlling stress as best as possible, because these do, once our immune system is compromised, then we're going to have more of an issue with an outbreak. So stress control, such as trying to reduce the amount of crowding, not doing a sudden diet change. Another thing that we brought up last month too, when we talked about enterotoxemia, would be trying to manage Mother Nature the best that you can. And that would be if we know that a weather event is coming in, making sure that those pairs stay together so that we don't get those calves off of, they don't sit off of nursing for 24 plus hours and then take a big meal, because that's going to affect their diet intake as well. And then also just it's important, I think, to touch on the Sandhills calving method again, whenever we're talking about any sort of diarrhea issue in calves, but keeping calves separated by age is really going to help you if you are having a problem, because we know that those older calves, We may potentially be shedding more pathogens in addition to not, not just the coccidia, but everything that can go on top of it to create more of a compromised immune system. So trying to keep those calves within a 10-day, 2-week age frame altogether will also help. And colostrum. So making sure you take, that they're getting that good colostral intake. Again, it's not that we are necessarily going to get some sort of immunity all from coccidia, but again, the secondary pathogens that we have problems with. We always know that colostrum is important.
So, if a producer suspects that they might have an issue with coccidiosis, what's a conversation they need to have with their veterinarian?
So I think it's good just to bring it up and say, if I've had this issue, what can we do for future? What can we do currently? I don't like to talk about treatment so much because treatment is difficult, but maybe more so prevention. We don't have, there are a couple things that you can use, and I'm sure that we've all been exposed to them, but there's in the United States, there's things called coccidiostats. And so that would be things like Coryd, Decox, the sulfa drugs. So we're trying to slow down basically how fast those parasites can develop, I guess, once they've ingest them. So you can potentially have a preventative measure. We know if you put that in the water or in the feed, but again, with weaning calves, we get a little bit of an issue because we don't necessarily have that much control. We know they'll drink some water, but having that as your only water source and a preventative may be a little difficult. As they get older, there is the coccidiocidal medications. So those are going to be ionophores that you can put, especially when we're talking about finishing cattle, getting into the feed yard, because we're having high. When you have a high concentration of animals, you may have more of an issue with having higher numbers of that parasite around. So that might help with that as well. But again, just maybe having someone come out and taking a look at your facilities and saying, is there an area that we could potentially try and manage the environment a little bit better? Is there a different area that we could maybe house these calves in to try to prevent this from happening? And then just looking at a good, there is no vaccine for coccidia, but again, controlling other intestinal pathogens. So making sure that our entire neonatal calf health protocol is up to date and we're doing what we can to try to prevent other things from happening as well.
Anything else on this topic you'd like to highlight today?
Just understanding, I think it's important to understand how it does pass through the animals, and that I think the biggest thing I wanted to highlight today was that we can't get rid of it completely in the environment, and it is self-limiting, meaning that if a calf isn't necessarily having major clinical symptoms, it should gain some immunity off of it, and then it should be better in the long run. So our goal is not to completely eliminate it, but just to try to manage what we can.
Thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you.
For more information on the topic that we discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, there are some resources at the beef.unl.edu website. I would encourage you to check out those resources if you have any questions.